My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, fast to freedom, stars to light.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for October 28th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed and on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site where you can click a red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal, Mike Spears, alongside your other co-host, Case Lowe, and we are commiserating about how, we don't know how it is, but basically, Case, it's the end of October, and I guess this is the time where everyone just gets a crud right now. So
it's a little sickly. I think my voice sounds fine. I'm more worried about it, 12 hours from now. But, it's that time of the year. I feel like I had this in September, too, and maybe a little bit in August. And if I'm thinking back to July, I probably had a few days of it then. So I don't know what's going on. I don't love it, but, about 90% right now. But I like coming to this podcast at 100 if I can help it.
I am probably at about a 75, and I was telling Case right before we record, I was in Montreal last weekend. It rocks. Montreal is really cool, but I think I did a big, I'm new to these kinds of things, but a big faux pas where I went and did about a hour, 15 minutes combined of sauna and steams, completely opening my sinuses at a boat spa in Montreal, and then proceeded to get on the plane the next day. I think that's what's doing it to me. I think that was an awful decision in hindsight, but we're going to play through it. It's been a pretty interesting few weeks in Dragon Gate since the last time we talked about the promotion on the show. Before we get into it, I want to thank everyone for all their kind notes for our Case for Masaki Mochizuki episodes we had last week. And as we get towards the end of the balloting, Case, I had a big change of heart when I finally hit send to Dave.
What was your change of heart?
I voted for Hayabusa.
Oh, what took you over the edge there?
I just, like, the more I started thinking about it, the more, like, the intangibles of his positive influence in a positive manner historically. Just, like, I was tabbing through just things on my phone at the airport waiting after clearing customs. And I was just like, I feel like Hayabusa is a Hall of Famer the more I kind of think about it. And that was kind of the absent thought that I had off and on since we recorded and had that episode, is I just think maybe he is, you can't hang the weight of FMW on him as much when you look on how much everyone across the world still kind of is aping him in a lot of ways.
I'm not there, and I certainly don't anticipate a change of heart before I submit my ballot. So that's very interesting to hear. But I am a firm believer with the intel that I have, all the podcasts I've listened to, the articles I've read, my understanding of Hayabusa's career. I think that is a, I think Hall of Very Good would be an insult. I think that's a Hall of Great Guy, but somebody that I do not feel is a Hall of Famer. You know, over the years that might change, but I am still not sold on Hayabusa and the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame for right now.
Yeah, I wonder, like, is it going to be something with him that I've seen, like, the public ballot so far, case, and I'm not going to say it one way or another to move your opinion of it, but I do kind of wonder that as we get, like, a couple more years past his death, and I mean, the amount of people who are still holding him in that high regard of junior heavyweight, I wonder if that's going to kind of crystallize around him and be kind of if it's either going to be the thing that gets him in, or is it just going to be like he stays on the ballot for 15 years. And then by that time, people will probably have a lot more centralized view of his legacy. And maybe that's kind of what's going to happen there.
No, I think he's getting in sooner rather than later, because I think Japan is so weak, and I think human instinct is to vote for people if they have the option to vote. And of the people on that ballot and of the people that I could see being added in the foreseeable future, outside of how I feel about Masaki Mochizuki, he's probably the strongest candidate. You know, I think Zach is going to do very well this year, not because I think he has a particularly strong case. I talked last week about how I'm actually shocked at the support he's getting, but I think people just want to, and I don't mean that to dehumanize anybody that's voting. I'm the same way. Like if I'm going to vote in a region, it's like, well, all right, let's figure out who I'm going to vote for here. And I just think Hayabusa is going to benefit greatly from being on the ballot during a particularly weak time in the Japan section.
Yeah. And I think, and you're talking about like the Zach portion of it, and not to get to rehash it, I wonder how much of him now being the prominent, like, singles New Japan candidate, modern New Japan candidate, kind of aids that along with the desire of people not wanting to necessarily. It feels bad when you kind of turn in a ballot and you go, you know, I'm essentially voting for one person and saying no to the rest. And I wonder how much of that, like, human nature kind of clicks.
I don't know. I don't feel bad about that. And I have the same opinion on contemporary New Japan that I do on WWE from February 2014 when the network launched through the arrival of Cody Rhodes, which is that I think it's such an unremarkable and unimportant period of professional wrestling. And I don't think there's any Hall of Fame representation being worthy to be in the hall. And with this modern New Japan era, we've got all the guys in that I want to get in. And until something drastic changes in that company, I have no interest in having any more representation from contemporary New Japan stars in the Hall of Fame.
No, that's entirely fair. But getting out of that kind of mode, last week, because of the Mochizuki episode, we put what was happening in main Dragon Gate a little bit on the back burner. But we're going to make up for that this week. We're going to talk about the events coming out of Kobe Art Center, as well as last week's King of Chop and the big Kyoto show a couple of days ago, and look at the Gate of Destiny doubleheader coming up this, I almost want to say weekend, but it's going into the holiday on Monday, but two nights coming up in Osaka, Edeon 2. And I guess, like, the first place I want to take you, because we didn't get a whole lot of a chance to talk about it last week, is now Shun and Hamare's unit is formed coming out of the Kobe Arts Center show, specifically on the 18th, with LCLO, as well as the return of Johnny Valletta and his it's tough, like, calling it a full-fledged face turn, because Cypatra is still kind of for better or for worse, like tweener coded, but the big return and angle with Johnny attacking Gajah Dokuro and then Shun proclaiming the formation of this unit that we kind of were expecting for a while, but not necessarily the inclusion of Johnny Valletta. But Kobe Art Center with both that Royal Sambo and the Psypatris stuff, it's interesting, at least to me, where all these directions that can come out of this unit forming right now.
I think it's interesting that, you know, when you go through the timeline of Shun Skywalker's career, he's a guy that really hasn't been in that many units. You know, the first bit of alliance that he had was with Mochizuki Dojo, which part of the deal with that first incarnation of Mochizuki Dojo was that, yes, they looked, acted, and did everything that a unit would do, but Mochizuki was very clear in storyline that it was not an official unit. But for the sake of this story, we'll count Mochizuki Dojo as a unit. And then he goes away during the generational warfare, so he's not a part of Team Dragon Gate. He comes back and does Masquerade. That lasts for a year. That goes into Z-Brats, which lasts for 3.5 years. And now we see him with only his fourth unit, which is interesting because the dynamics of all of these have been so different. The Shun Skywalker that was in Mochizuki Dojo was drastically different from the one that was, you know, unaffiliated in 2019. And then with Masquerade in 2021, we see the drastic character change the year after that with Z-Brats. And now we have the start of a new unit, the morphing of a character. I don't want to say the start of a new character because it hasn't been presented that way, but the morphing of a character. And I think you're right in that this is a unit that is so far being presented as tweeners. And I think my big takeaway from watching the Valletta turn, watching this unit in action in Kobe and Kyoto, is that I want this unit to start acting like full-fledged baby faces. And I think that would be a really, really good thing for Dragon Gate. I think once we get past the initial, like, hey, you know, we're still wrestling the guys that we were teaming with just a few months ago, I think the best thing they can do is get into a feud with Vibes and have Vibes lean heel. I think the best thing they can do is get into a feud with Paradox and have Paradox lean heel. As insane as it sounds, given the positioning of Shun Skywalker throughout his entire career, the inexperience of Homare, the mystery behind El Cielo, and the look of Gianni Valletta, this is your babyface unit going forward. This represents Dragon Gate and the powers that be better than anything else they have on this roster right now.
Yeah, and I guess for me, seeing the Johnny turn happening in the Shun Mare versus Kakuta and Kai match from the 18th, and the way that everyone reacted to Johnny coming out, first he's still using the Z-Brats theme, which kind of works for him. Like, I think that we can't ask for too much from the Dragon Gate sound a sound man right now, so if he's reusing that, okay, that's fine. But the way that the Kobe Art Center crowd just freaked out, and then right as the turn happened, as the Dragon Storm no contest music was playing and the crowd kind of going crazy, the thing that immediately went in my head is, are we having babyface Johnny Valletta? And then from the shows on the 19th and then Kyoto, Johnny Valletta is actually a really fun babyface, like heavy in this kind of unit. And the presentation of him and Psypatra, where Psypatra all kind of comes out to Shun Skywalker's music, and then they are all waiting, and then suddenly you get the sirens and Johnny just emerges, and then you're off to the races. It's a really fun effect that as soon as they're through with the Gajah Dokuro stuff, I feel like it's going to really lend well to play babyface. Like the one unit where it's going to be tough for them to ever play babyface against will be D-Courage, but I'm really intrigued by the idea of other units getting involved with this act, and especially you're at four right now, and you like watch them both on the 19th and then in Kyoto case. And one of the things that kind of popped my mind is, if we're going full face, you're going to need to really have someone act as a lost post. And Homare is like naturally by experience should be in that position, but I'm already kind of going, all right, let's get a young guy in here just so that we have clearly moved Homare on it. And the fact that I'm already thinking about who they should be picking up like 9 days into the unit, because I feel like there's enough runway as a babyface. It's a lot more kind of exciting than I guess like the transition from Gold Class to Love and Peace, whereas I felt like it was more like a natural transition and nothing really kind of changed other than the colors and the theme and the act kind of, but really no one was getting elevated or moved out of their station here. But it does kind of like lend a question, like when you're going to get into position with 6-man and 8-man tags, that I kind of wonder if we're good at 4 right now, or if it's going to be something where they're going to quickly absorb more people.
Well, they're going to need at least one more just for the sake of having a guy that can lose. I mean, that's a given. I think this is a unit that's going to be very dominant. Historically, anything Shun's done has been pretty dominant, but this is going to be a unit where you're not going to beat Shun a ton. I don't think you're going to beat Himari a ton. You better not beat Valletta at all. And then, you know, whatever happens with this mass character, it doesn't strike me as somebody that's not going to be pushed heavily, mask or no mask, identity reveal, no identity reveal. And that's when I look at this roster, and that's when I start to scratch my chin a little bit, because they seem motivated to do something with Fuda, and they seem motivated to do something with Sahara, and they seem motivated to do something with Daiki. To me, Daiki would be the more interesting, or the most interesting of the young guys, for him to be in that spot. But then you're just beating him again, and I almost want to keep those young guys away and at least give them a fighting chance to be in a unit where they're not the designated lost post 100% of the time. But also, you look at the unit landscape, and I don't think they're breaking up anybody from Love and Peace anytime soon. I don't think from the heel unit we're going to have any more immediate casualties. I still cross my fingers and hope for the Ishin babyface turn sooner rather than later, but I don't think we're getting that. If you break up Vibes or you break up D-Courage, I mean, you know, you can beat UT like a drum all day, but other than that, those are guys that win matches. So I guess you're stuck doing the young guy thing, which I don't particularly like, because I would like to see one, if not all of those guys, get a legitimate run at least trying to do something.
Yeah, and then when you look at how the rookies are right now, there's no reason why Kimura should be back in there. Kimura needs to go and accept his fate and be the Paradox assistant. Like that works so great. Why don't we go back to that right now? And you see the situation that we're going to have at Gate Destiny, where we're having a comedy wrestler debut, Jiro Shinbashi, and it's an interesting position because there are no like obvious answers, and that's what and a lot of the units and even the X-Mochi Dojo guys, as you like laid out, like I'm a lot more in a way intrigued about what purchase Tanaka and Fuda have, as like maybe Fuda is going to get slid into D-Courage, or Tanaka is going to be like, I'm tired of Yoshioka and Daya running the show, I'm doing my own thing. And I kind of see him in that position, and I don't want to kind of pull him away from that potential to just be a lost post again. So it's interesting. There's not a real clear answer to me.
Well, I think that brings up a big picture point here that we can sort of have as the cloud hanging over this episode, which is that I think by and large, post Dangerous Gate, this promotion has been fine with a capital F, but I don't think anything feels super hot right now. I feel like the last thing that I was really, really invested in, even though I like the Psypatra stuff, and I have more to say on Valletta a little bit later and just how brilliant I think he is as a performer, but I feel like we've really felt not having these Mexico versus Japan matches on these shows. Those had a little bit more depth, and I was a little bit more intrigued by those than I guess I realized. And now the problem is that you've got Vibes and D-Courage, and I don't feel like you need both of them, because D-Courage, assuming they make it through the end of the year, although there is always a chance that Tanaka turns, it'll be 4 years of D-Courage coming up in January, which is an extraordinarily long time for any unit, but let alone that type of unit. Now, they've gone through different incarnations, you know, Daya and Yoshioka together, Kakuta is the assistant, the trio with Kakuta. the one night they were a foursome before Yoshioka got hurt. And then, you know, as you see Yoshioka come back, but then Kakuta turn. It's a unit that has changed a lot. But if you're going to just have the standard flag-bearing babyface unit, I think I'm ready to shuffle the deck just a little bit more and have either Vibes exist, because I'm never going to complain about the existence of Vibes if you just want to keep them as an ongoing babyface unit, or D-Courage. And it feels like there's a logjam there, and I'm struggling with this promotion right now for that reason.
Yeah, and it's also, we're kind of killing time till King of Gate in some ways. Then the fact that we have this doubleheader coming up in Edeon 2, kind of inheriting the Gate of Destiny slot because the main room is closed, it does kind of feel like that you're building things up because you have that doubleheader coming up here, and you have in a way been like, all right, we are like bringing in people like Daiji Ishimori for this show. We're doing all five titles, even the Oware gates coming back for this. So you're kind of doing things that you're building up things maybe in the long term, in the long term direction, as you like look towards like Saipatra versus Gaja Dokuro on night one, or on night two. But then you also look at it and you go like, we were thinking it was a false Susumu, but in reality is we need to have a Dreamgate defense, and he kind of fills in that slot there. And I'm never going to be mad about having a Susumu Yokosuka Dreamgate shot, but it's just not necessarily anything that I say has depth in the promotion, right?
Like, well, because it's a weekend that feels cold, does it not?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's shown by the ticket sales, which at least from the advanced ticket sales that I have access to are not great.
Yeah, and it's just you also look at like the rest of these cards, and it's like, okay, you're bringing in Billy Kincaid for Ryo Tanaka. That's a nice touch for everyone. Like, everyone's able to say, yeah, no, that's a trainer versus student in like a building that's very important to Ryo Tanaka. Like that's nice. And there's a level of depth there, but it's a level of depth that's providing, you're providing that depth essentially to the person who's already bought the ticket, right? Like, that's what I kind of see in the situation. Like, if you are into the promotion right now, there are things to get into, but if you're someone that's looking and seeing what shows are going on and trying to kind of find like the hot act, I mean, it's not there on these cards. Like, looking at the card for the first night, I mean, you're bringing in Kikataro just because you're in Osaka, so you need to have Kikataro and Kamen on those cards. And those are not the things that when this promotion is running hot that they kind of do on these kinds of weekends. They run it by themselves, and it's like, yeah, no, we put these butts in the seats, and that is clearly not what they're trying to attempt to do this weekend when you have that and then Taiji Ishimori coming in.
Yeah, the undercard of that first show is pretty brutal, because for as much as I like Monte, Valletta, and Kukui individually, I'm not excited about that three-way match at all.
It kind of hurts probably Monte in that. Like, you have like your three heavyweights kind of colliding, and it just does not necessarily make one. The two who do not lose this or do not win this match are not going to look good, because they got definitively beat as like the king of the heavyweight, right?
Yeah, it's just a mess of a match. I mean, I don't see it being any good. Not that those guys aren't talented. I find that match to be really messy and a little confusing with the way that
it's positioned too.
The whole thing I find to be very strange. But to go back to big pictures, I don't want to go into a full Gate of Destiny preview just yet. But you know, we talked a month ago when the King of Gate blocks were announced about, oh, is this going to be a tournament where Susumu goes to the finals? And I know you and I had initially talked about the idea of a Susumu Homari finals. And I made the point to you. I go, look, you know, Susumu Yokosuka is one of the 30 greatest wrestlers of all time. He's one of my personal favorites. I'm never going to complain about seeing him in a big match when he can still go, when he's proven that he can still go. But when he lost to Kai in 2022 in that Dreamgate match at Dead or Alive, which is still one of the greatest Dreamgate matches of all time, it was... symbolic would undersell it. They were telling you in the moment he's transitioning into another phase of his career. The Susumu that you knew as a top of the line player is no longer a top line player. And we saw last year when he challenged Monte for the Dreamgate belt. It was a very good match. It's actually a great match. I thought they did excellent work with one another, but it didn't have the juice that some of the other Dreamgate matches have had in recent vintage because Susumu's in another phase in his career. Now, Susumu versus Monte was a babyface versus babyface matchup where they were desperate to find any sort of stabilization for Monte after the horrible way that they got that title on him and the fact that they set him up for failure by getting that title on him in that three-way match. The Kakuta situation is different. This is just a weak challenger for Kakuta. I don't think they've done enough to cement Susumu as a killer against him, and I was concerned about the idea of Susumu versus Homaru being too weird of a generational clash and making Susumu look old. Kakuta's two generations before Homaru, and I think it's a weird generational clash where we're going to be reminded of how old Susumu is in a way that isn't flattering or complimentary.
Yeah, and then you immediately go from that into the tournament, and the more I look at this, the more I'm kind of it seems that the brackets are just weighted in like in so much manner that you're just like, oh, okay, like we're having this weekend, and I did just like big picture wise, it does not feel maybe outside the Triangle Gate match that like anything's really in a level of doubt because all of these defenses are just kind of happening. Like you had you had Chibi's basically challenge at the Kobe Art Center shows, and then there's no build whatsoever because Yoshioka and Daya are going and losing in this Super Junior Tag League. So it's just like, oh, are we supposed to expect that something is going to build to this match, have any sort of like excitement towards it? And it's like, no, but it's the main event on Monday. And we will see what kind of happens with that, but it's just cold. Like, I think you're absolutely right. It just kind of feels cold. It's not saying that like there was not fun stuff going on in the last few weeks. Like, I think the overall mystery from LCLO and then then having what I thought was kind of a in some places over delivering Kyoto card, in some places kind of feeling like we were doing perfunctory things, because that's kind of how I felt about that semifinal Dreamgate preview match with Susumu and Hulk versus Kakuta and Kai. As soon as the match kind of got going, it's just like, oh, it seems like this is a checklist because this is what you do. You have a match like this before the show, and then it just kind of all happened. And like the only like to me like real notable thing coming out of it was that Hulk kicked out of the hip attack, and it's just like, oh, why is that happening with Hulk when Susumu is your challenger? It just feels odd.
I liked most of the two Kobe shows that we saw. I thought the Kyoto show was really flat. I did not like anything on that show.
Yeah, I liked how Sahara and Mochizuki worked, but that was awesome.
I mean, yeah, it was fine. Undercard match, yeah. Though. You know, nothing mattered on the show, I thought, delivered to any degree.
Yeah, and it was the kind of match that, honestly, you would think you would see from Akihiro Sahara last year, not this year. And then, like, I think you, like, look at these shows, and maybe the element of losing Yamato and losing D-Courage kind of hurts, like, the overall tenor of the show, because then you're starting to have situations where it's like Ultimo, where you have this match, Tanaka Ryofuda, which fun little pairing. I kind of like the two of them together with Monte versus Ultimo, Shrami, Shin J, and UT. And it's really just the perfunctory, and it's UT gets kind of beaten like a dog here. It's just kind of wild how like this match is just, with how the cards are laid out, like this was a match that was made. It was not a bad match. It was just like, what are we doing here with like having Ultimo Rambly team with Natural Vibes and then kind of just be used as a Tanaka looks strong. Like that was kind of my takeaway, was like, why are we doing here? Oh, Tanaka has to look strong. Okay.
In terms of the stuff that I liked, I want to go back to Kobe here. You know,
please do.
The Gianni Valletta turn, which, by the way, those Kobe Art Center shows, I want to note, they did two shows at Kobe Art Center. I was told from somebody in attendance, it's the best attendance they've ever seen in that building. and that it was the best atmosphere that they've ever had in that building. You know, there's, I think Osaka is going to draw very poorly. The early advances on the King of Gate Korakuen show are very poor, but there's been some local houses lately. The two Kobe shows did very well. There's a UT homecoming show coming up in like a month that is almost sold out. I saw UT tweeting about that last week. There's,
well,
there's
Nagoya.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's, yeah, it's, we're trending on an advanced sellout for a house show, which doesn't, you know, doesn't often happen. So there's a few local attendances that I think are worth noting, you know, in terms of the health of Dragon Gate's business right now. But the Kobe Art Center shows, I thought these shows were fine, certainly above the average Art Center show and one of the better outings they've had in Kobe this year. Especially, I thought that first show was pretty solid. But the Valletta turn, we've got to talk about this. So this was on the first show.
It's so cool.
It was so well done. It made me so happy. Semi-main event, Kaya Madoka Kakuta versus Himare and Shun Skywalker. And as they are going about their business, all of a sudden, we hear the sirens go off, the Gianni Valletta sirens that we have become so accustomed to, which again, you know, I don't know who thought of that, but I think that is one of the more brilliant things that we've had in wrestling over the last 10 years or so. I think people like you and I and a lot of people that listen to this are looking at the current state of wrestling and going, we want to be forward thinking. We want to evolve. We want to adapt to change. But some of the changes that are taking place are not changes that we necessarily support. And the Valletta thing, the sirens in particular, are so old school. They are so exciting. To me, it is impossible not to be excited about Valletta hitting the ring and doing that entrance still. You know, this is what, his fourth tour over the last 2 years? If he just would have stayed with the heel unit, I would not be bored of this act. I think it's perfect the way that they've executed it. But Valletta comes out, he raises hell in the entrance like he does, and then you have a spot where it looks like Kai and Kakuta are setting Shun and Himare up to eat a double lariat from Valletta, and instead Valletta takes out Kai and Kakuta. He turns face, he joins up with what would become Shun Skywalker's unit. It's a moment that I didn't see coming. When I watched the show, I didn't know this happened. It goes to show, I think, the way they've handled Valletta. I think he's the single most well-booked wrestler in all of wrestling since his debut in Dragon Gate. I think he's the most interesting guy in wrestling because of his limitations and the way that Dragon Gate is able to hide those limitations. I think the way that he's been handled has been absolutely brilliant. It's one of my proudest victories because I saw the vision from his first match. And my only complaint is that they had the Dragonstorm song playing as he turned, and I really would have liked to have been able to hear the raw crowd reaction because I thought everything was done perfectly. I wouldn't have changed a thing. I just wish the house music wasn't on for that.
Yeah, and it was very clear that the crowd was popping crazy for it, too. Like, it was just a fantastic moment.
It was a moment. It was absolutely a moment.
And I felt like having that come off, like right after the King of Gate entry Rambo with Cielo winning, and then you have like the four of them standing afterwards and going like, yes, no, this is it, and we're coming after those titles, and we are now full-fledged at war with Gajah Dokuro. It is something where I really want them to, like, the advantage of having Gajah Dokuro as like already like an established and strong core is I would want to find combinations of Saipatra and Gajah Dokuro to run throughout the rest of this year. Like, you should be able to, like, why not have LCLO tag of Johnny Valletta against Manoli sometime on a December televised show? Like there's a lot of options here, and it's just real exciting to kind of see like a new fresh unit like this, whereas we kind of got the rehash and like the evolution for Love and Peace. I know I was stammering there. Love and Peace, but this one, it there's a lot of possibilities, and especially seeing LCLO and adding him into the mix, and especially if things go the way that everything seems to be, like, that's its own that's its own can of worms that you get to open up in a while. And that's exciting to kind of see the grenade and be like, oh, that grenade's going to go off one day. I don't know when, I don't know where, but El Cielo, just like when a Dia Inferno kind of showed up and you're like, oh, we know something's going to happen soon with this guy. It adds its own little layer of excitement to Sypatra.
I think the money there as a tag team that isn't just Shun and Himare is Himare and Valletta. I think that's a really interesting unit, because you got to remember one of my favorite moments in Dragon Gate history. I was thinking about this earlier today. I'm getting all excited now thinking about it again, was the September Korakuen last year where Himare debuts. He turns heel. They have one more match. They go to intermission. They come back. Valletta makes a surprise return. Nobody knew that Valletta was coming back. And you got to remember that Himare, when Valletta does the pose with Zebratz, is side-eyeing Valletta because he had been getting his ass kicked by him during every entrance for Valletta's first tour, and he wasn't really thrilled at the prospect of being in a unit with this guy. If they want to explore that, they can. I am actually not going to get hung up if they don't. I think enough time has passed, and I think Himare has evolved in such a way that I think that thread can be tied up and they can move on from it if they so choose. But I think the chemistry of those two guys, the way they both move around the ring, is so interesting. And I think Himare-Valletta teams going forward would be something that I'd like to see outside of Rey de Parejas, where I'm hoping they don't get screwy, and I hope they give a Shun and Himare back in Rey de Parejas the following in 2026.
Yeah, and I just like the idea of, okay, Johnny has been like this absolute just behemoth, and what's the teamwork going to be between Himare, who over the year has shown like his chemistry with Shun Skywalker and their teamwork. It's one of the things that I still catches my eye every Shun Mare match, and it's like, what's it going to be like with Johnny if they go that route? Like, is this going to be basically Johnny like having people in like vice holds, and then out of nowhere you get kicked in the head by Himare, and that's what it's going to be based about? Or is he going to like throw Himare around? Like, there's a lot of ways they can go with that, Case.
I think throwing Himare around is the most interesting of those options. And then you got to remember, you go to that main event in Kyoto when you see a great rope running spot with Valletta and Ishin that ends with Valletta throwing a wild crossbody that came across like he was a baby face, you know.
The flying burrito kind of crossbody that you would see. Like, it was amazing.
He's been able to pull off this transition. I mean, I said a few weeks ago, I don't know if you can turn the guy, because I'm not sure that I want to see that character exist in a shell that isn't the one that we're used to. Now, that is maybe my flaw as a viewer, is if you would have told me in 2018 that Pac was going to come back as a heel, I would have said no chance. If you would say that Ricochet would be like an overly charismatic, talkative heel on American TV, I would say there's no chance. If you were going to tell me Valletta's going to turn face and it's all going to make sense and it's all going to be easy to adjust to, I would have said I just don't think there's a way. But Valletta has figured that out. And again, my intrigue going forward, to go back to my original point, is I think the more this unit leans into not being rad dudes with attitude, you know, I don't need them stealing the D Courage act. I don't need them coming out on skateboards. But I think the more that you can make them a lawful good and not a chaotic good or a chaotic neutral, I think that's going to be really, really interesting. Because I you know, with Valletta specifically, the way that the audience has taken to him and that act, you have a really interesting situation now where that guy can become a lovable babyface. And 18 months ago, I would have thought that was completely impossible, but they've done it. They've done the work. The way they have handled Valletta, I'll say it again, I think he has been the best booked wrestler in all of wrestling over the last 2 years. The fact that they have been able to thread the needle with him time and time again and turn him into the character that he is for this promotion, I think is utterly remarkable. And I wish they got more credit for it.
Yeah, and then what were your thoughts on the 8-man tag on the 19th?
I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was a good match.
Adding in Cielo into the mix, it's one of those things that I feel like until the grenade goes off, everyone is going to be doing the frame by frames of Cielo and TN Revolution, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, if it is who we all are kind of assuming, and this is not just like discording and like this, I've seen this within the native fan base doing this as well. And it's going to be a lot of fun just like being able to go like, wow, you had that injury and you go away, and this is not the first time that someone has retired and then come back. If it is this case, like you think about Yasushi Kanda and his spine coming back 4 years later, and just the way that he's kind of hit the ground, and they are protecting LCLO, but it's been a really kind of cool thing to see, and him coming in and just wiping out the Gata Dokuro side in Kyoto was one of those things I was like, hell yeah, this is a great way to use him right now. And as he's getting his win back, and very clear, if this is where we're going to go with that, and if it's someone else, they are being very, I think they're playing with fire a little bit by having him do the limit bomb and letting people kind of draw the conclusion. But if it is who we think it is, I think this is like exactly what you kind of want to do with him. And then when the grenade explodes, and then you're, and then I imagine what you're able to do with him when it's kind of like, oh no, this is actually Takuma Nishikawa that is back. And that's another like great angle to this unit.
Do you have anything else on the Kobe shows or the Kyoto show? I have something not on the run sheet that I wanted to mention really quick, but I don't want to move on too quickly if you've got more to say.
No, Hyo versus KZ, Hyo being kind of stretched out by KZ for 13 minutes and then winning with a Samson driver, and then now getting to face Taiji Ishimori in his first like main Dragon Gate show ever is kind of like a wild thing. Oh, wait, did Taichi do any of the GHC Junior stuff back in 2007?
There's the Shingo and Hulk versus,
that's right,
Taichi and Kenta Taichi match. But that, Taichi, I mean, that was 100 years ago. So it's the first time he's been on a New Japan proper show as a New Japan wrestler, and he's been in New Japan for almost 10 years now.
Yeah, and I mean, other than that, there was nothing between Taichi and the main company for 20 years, basically. So it's kind of a wild way to kind of have Taiji Ishimori kind of have this kind of return, when we've seen like how the other returns for like people like Yohei or even like Milano Collection AT was kind of in a lot of ways, everyone was going like, oh, hell yeah, this is happening here with Taiji. It's just like, man, it's nice that you're doing this, but unless you're working through your trauma for a paycheck, I don't know why necessarily he is the special guy for this.
I'm intrigued to see what level of effort Ishimori puts into it. I maintain that if Hyo ends up working Super Juniors next year, which a lot of signs are pointing that direction now, I do think he's going to crush it. I think he'll be excellent in that tournament. I think we'll see what we saw of him in America, where Hyo, for whatever reason, outside of Dragon Gate, is even more valuable than him inside of Dragon Gate. So I'm intrigued to see what that Ishimori match looks like. We had an announcement a week ago today that we did not get to cover on the podcast last week. I will read from the Dragon Gate English account on X, in which they said, company announcement, we are pleased to announce that Mr. Chihiro Sawai has been appointed Dragon Gate's global marketing and investor advisor, overseas special advisor, and investment and financial strategy advisor, effective October 20th. I did some digging on this. I talked to some people. I wasn't sure initially if this was something that was going to nudge Ho-Ho out of a position. It seemed like it might have been a more official role than what he had been doing. You and I, after reading some translated tweets, weren't entirely sure if this was the beginning of some transition of power between he and President Kido, because Kido has talked about wanting to step down at a certain point. After talking to some people, this is a position that I don't want to say should not be taken seriously, but it is not going to alter anything that we notice going forward. This is the guy who puts on their shows and funds their shows when they're in Hong Kong. He seems incredibly well-liked based on the outpouring of support from babyfaces and heels on Twitter after this announcement, but it is not something that I think is going to dramatically affect the day-to-day of Dragon Gate, given the information that I have on this.
Yeah, and it... for a company like Dragon Gate, and especially in their precarious position, my initial reaction to this last Tuesday, other than, all right, I need to kind of figure out what the situation is. And thanks for that kind of update with me being out of town. I haven't been able to kind of ask around with it. Like, a reality with Dragon Gate is that money and cash infusions are critical. You know, it's not... I know that Bushiroad is now like operating kind of differently towards New Japan now, but there was always kind of a thought of like, okay, you have this backing here, and Dragon Gate never had it and was not. And the idea of Dragon Gate being independent and remaining independent has been like a core thing, that if certain decisions or certain other opportunities presented itself, that, I mean, I don't think I'm like exaggerating being like Chicken Little here, but if there was a position that this company needed money, the reality probably was going to be selling the company or having someone absorb it. So the fact that it's more looking for investment opportunities and looking from, frankly, a area that they already have a level of interaction with Sawai doing the Hong Kong shows and also being in Hong Kong, I think for like almost like 20 years at this point as an institutional investor, I feel, at least as a Dragon Gate fan, I would feel a lot more comfortable with this than the other possible opportunities that we have seen and other ways that investment have been made across the world over the last few years.
It seems like a guy that's beneficial to have around. And so they have,
absolutely,
they have made a point of keeping him around.
Yeah. And I think that really for the Southeast Asia and Hong Kong has been one of those territories, for lack of better terms, that Dragon Gate has always kept their finger in, and really starting with Jason in 2017. And then to this point, I mean, they love running those Hong Kong shows when they do that. And they've talked about other shows in and around Southeast Asia, that it makes a lot of sense for them to have someone who is based in Hong Kong kind of involved now more literally within the company.
Yeah, I agree. It seems, again, not like a dramatic move, but one that's going to keep a lot of people happy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And who's to say, like, if he's looking for like these investments, like this is an opportunity for them that necessarily would not come to other promotions in their position if they didn't have this guy. So I think it's great, honestly.
King of Chop returned, Mike.
Yes, King of Chop returned this last weekend as a part of Prime Zone Plus 16. It was decided by our Brave Gate champion and at least of time of Prime Zone GM Ryoya Tanaka. And it's nice seeing King of Chop back. It's the first King of Chop in 12 years. I think the last one was the one that T-Hawk won in 2012, I want to say. But like it's something within Dragon Gate that was a really kind of wild thing that was done at a time where a lot more eyeballs were on the promotion. The first winner was Eita. King of Chop won in 2012. That one allowed him to get into King of Gate and then also start his excursion. And then the second winner was Kagetora in 2012. Yoshino won one. I don't have who won the fourth tournament in 2012, but they haven't done them in 13 years. They brought it back as a part of Prime Zone Plus, doing a whole entire tournament to decide who is the 2025 King of Chop. In case sometimes it might be a little bit the best to leave the history alone. You know, it was fun seeing it come back, but in like this kind of way, it didn't necessarily have the same flavor as that we saw before, I feel like.
It did not. You know, it was essentially spread throughout an entire Prime Zone episode, and I was violently fast-forwarding anything that wasn't two people actively chopping one another. I don't know what it was about the presentation of this that didn't seem to land. I liked the finals, mainly because I didn't know that Kato was known for having chops like that. I was a little surprised to see him in the position that he was in, and I enjoyed that, but something about this was off, and I can't figure out what it was.
I would like to say that the addition of referee, judge, and tiebreaker Akihiro Sahara was very funny. Like that part, that aspect of it, I think was a nice little thing. Sahara coming out in a suit and with flags and and disqualifying Don Fuji, giving him a red card for doing double chops. Like, that was a good bit about it. But I feel like the big thing about 2012 was that it was a complete shoot thing that everyone was doing. And so you had people take one chop and decide, I'm not doing this anymore, and ring the bell and get out of it. And instead, it felt a little bit more of a work. It felt much more of a work, at least up until you got to like Kato and Tanaka in the finals. And at that point, I thought that the three of them just absolutely belted the piss out of each other. Yoshiki, Kato, I don't know if it was Kamei who did it to him or if it was Tanaka, but he had blood blisters coming up from his chest by the end of it, and he pretty dominated the tournament all throughout. And I don't know, did you think that it felt a little bit more work than 13 years ago?
It felt less serious. You know, I think there was real showmanship and a real alpha nature to the original ones, and this one just didn't have that vibe. I don't know if work is necessarily the vibe, but it felt painfully real in 2012 and 2013, and it did not have that sense this time around.
No. Just to run through the brackets, it was a wacky one. You had Junior versus Rita. The winner would go up against Ryoya Tanaka. Then you also had Monde Ryu versus Yoshiki Kato and Don Fuji versus Kamei. And then the winners of that little quadrant would go on to face a winner of a four-way match that Dragon Kid won. And Dragon Kid just proceeded to stink up the joint. But the finals ended up being Tanaka and Kato. Yoshiki Kato is your 2025 King of Chop. By pretty much the way that they did the decision. So after it's three chops, and after each chop, Sahara goes and asks them if they want to continue. The only person who quit was Mondai Ryu, who got a yellow card for doing repeated chops, and then Kato got a penalty chop. And after the penalty chop, Ryu quit, but it was done that there was crowd voting, and then Kakatora and Ryo Saito, who were on commentary on the crowd mics the entire time, as a former King of Chop winner, Kakatora was the other judge, and if it ended up being a tie, then Sahara broke the tie there. But basically, every single one of them went to a decision. Almost every single one of them was pretty convincing who won. Until I think like the one that I thought was probably the most competitive one was Junior and Rita in the first round, probably.
Yeah, probably.
But it was pretty conclusive in each match who won it. And Dragon Kid should not do King of Chop next time, because it really felt like that it was a rib against him that Kato just chopped the piss out of him, and DK was not even doing anything really with his chops.
No, not at all. It was, you know, again, leave the memories alone. I think well said.
Leave the memories alone. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on over the last few weeks before we start breaking down these Gate of Destiny cards?
No, let's preview Gate of Destiny. This night one card is quite intriguing. I think I will have the written review for this show. You're going to do night two, if my memory serves me correctly.
Right. Yeah, no, that tracks. So it is on Sunday and Monday this weekend from Edeon Reno Sokka number 2. The Sunday card is a 6 p.m. local time. That should be, oh, it's daylight savings. I'm not going to try to do that. But we get our hour back this weekend, Case. But running down the card from night one, we open with Love and Peace, Benkei and Mochizuki Jr. versus Kai and Yoshiki Kato of Gaja Dokoro. Match two is the Open the Ware Gate Championship, and also Jiro Shinbashi's debut match. Kunishibo came and returned to defend the title against the fighting salaryman Jiro Shinbashi. We do that they've been elusive about which one this is in the video clip. I think it's Kamei's dad. It seems like it's going to kind of be like that. Match three, 10-man tag, Ultimo, Dragon Kid, BB Hulk, Kagatora, and Naruki Doi versus Mochi Fuji, Takashi, Sachioko Boy, and Kikataro. That three-way heavyweight match between Luis Monte, Johnny Valletta, and El Kakui opened the Brave Gate championship match. Ryoya Tanaka defends against his trainer, Billy King Kid. Match six, semi-main event, four-way six-man tag, Natural Vibe, Strong Machine J, KZ, and UT Love and Peace, Hyo and Jackie Kamei and Rita, Saipatra, Shun Skywalker, Hamare and El Cielo, and Gaja Dokuro, Kota Minora, Jason Lee, and Ishin. And the main event for night one is the Open the Dream Gate Championship match, Madoka Kakuta versus Asuma Yokosuka.
It's not a card that I love. You know, I think the undercard is pretty weak. You know, we'll see what happens with Ben and Junior and Kai and Kato. I guess that has a chance to overdeliver. I don't know in my 10 years of covering Dragon Gate if I've ever felt more out of the loop than what's happening with Shinbashi Jiro. We don't know who this is.
Well, there was a video clip that they put up on the Dragon Gate Twitter of this guy who is kind of slight looking, and they're very clearly trying to protect anyone from seeing him, and just outright saying that he will be debuting against Kunishiro with Kamen. And unless this is someone we've never seen before, Case, it's when you look at the rookies that have been around, I blank on what Kamei's dad's name is, but you have Kamei's dad, you have Dai Sukiguchi, and then you have Koki Oshima. It kind of, when the guy walks up out of focus, it's pretty clear to me that it's going to be Kamei's dad. And, you know, debuting straight into comedy wrestler mold is something that can be limiting, but we've also seen someone like Sakura Chikawa take this and become the greatest comedy wrestler of all time. So we'll have to see about this. Shinbashi.
We're sure it's not just Jiro.
No. I will send you the Twitter clip right now, Case. But I think it's very clear that it is probably Kamei's dad. But I think Jiro actually has an All Japan date that day.
Well, I guess that's better that it's not Jiro. That's sort of rocking a hard place, because I don't really want to see a rookie debut as a comedy wrestler, but I also don't want to see Jiro. So I will take the rookie. Let me skim through this video here real quick.
Yeah, it's Kamei's dad.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, all right. Yeah, I gotcha. And he's running with a brief. Okay, yeah, I'm going to hate this because he's running the ropes with a briefcase. All right, well, that's too bad. That's going to be a match that I don't like and I'm going to review. Look, I think the last three on this show should be pretty special. I think Billy Kincaid is going to try everything in his power to have a really special match with Ryoya Tanaka. And I think the work that Tanaka has been doing is going to give him a chance to have a really special match with Billy Kincaid. It's in Osaka. They're going to do a style of wrestling that I particularly really enjoy. I have high hopes for that, and I hope they're able to meet it. The four-way tag match, let those guys go. Give them a ton of time. I'm very excited about that. Dream Gate match will be interesting. You know, it's Susumu Yokosuka in a big spot. I don't ever want to count him out. I think this is the weakest he's looked heading into a title match before. It's the least amount of confidence I've ever had in him to deliver in a title match. So this is one where, you know, if we leave this weekend with a 3.25-star Dreamgate match, it's going to be really deflating and disappointing, but I won't be surprised. If we leave this weekend with a 4.5-star Dreamgate match, I won't be surprised either. I think there's 0% chance he wins. I know some people had talked about them rehashing what they did with Shingo and Susumu in 2016, where Susumu gets a surprise win and then drops the title back in his next defense. I think that would be disastrous. I think that's a terrible idea given these exact circumstances. I think we're going to have Kakuta dominate, Susumu fight hard, and then Kakuta win. And it's a match where I have zero question as to what the result is going to be. The only question is, how good is the match going to be?
Yeah. And I guess, like, for me, my big thing with these kinds of perfunctory defenses is that I just want, like, at least one moment, Case, where I could buy into a Susumu near fall, where, like, he lands the he lands a Jumbo no Kachi, or he does the Jumbo no Kachi Gatame hold, like, flash pen. And if there's a moment where it's like at 2.5 kick out and I go like, oh crap, that's a success. Because there is absolutely like no build to this, it, as we've talked about, feels kind of cold. So just getting that level of investment to me is going to be a real essential there for night one. Because yeah, no, that four-way six man, just let them go off to the races. I have no doubt that those 12s can't knock them dead if you give them like 10, 15 minutes with it. And I've always had a soft spot for Billy Kincaid. So the fact that he's been doing more stuff, that he's been doing stuff with the promotion leading up to this, especially in Osaka. It's a nice thing, and I like that a whole lot. Want me to go through night two?
Please do.
All right, we are opening with rookies, as it's Ryu Fuda and Kazuma Kimura versus Daiki Yanagiuchi and Akihiro Sahara. Match two. Well, Case, you get a deal with him in a comedy context. I get a deal with Jiro Shimbashi in a Don Fuji context, and I think I'm winning out here.
I think you are too. This is payback for having you review Gate of Miyane.
Yeah. You had me right about Danchiko Dino Man in 2025. That was a bummer. Match three, we have Paradox, Yamato, Dragon Kid, BB Hulk, and Haruki Doi versus Ultimo Dragon, Masaki Mochizuki, Mondai Ryu, and Ho Ho Loon. Match four, Ryoya Tanaka, Luis Monte, and El Kakui versus Madoka Kakuta, Minoru, and Jason Lee. Match five, Susumu and Kaga Tora, Yokosuka Chome versus Strong Machine J and KZ versus Benkei and Mochizuki Jr. Special singles match, Hyo versus Taiji Shimori. Open the Triangle Gate Championship. Kai Ishin and Yoshiki Kato of Gajo Dokoro versus Shun Hamare, Johnny Valletta with El Cielo of Saipatra. And your main event for night two of Gate of Destiny, open the Twin Gate titles. D-Courage, Yuki Yoshioka, and Dragon Daya versus Jackie Kamei and Rita. That's almost like a when they would do a Champion Gate and you would have the double header. It definitely felt like that there was a level of balance to the nights. It does kind of feel like that this Twin Gate match is put on as a main event to kind of just hang the house on it. It's kind of hard to get into it, I feel like.
I see Jackie Kamei in a main event and a main event title match nonetheless, and my expectations go through the roof, possibly to an unfair degree, but I feel like that has to be the clubhouse favorite to be match of the weekend, given the position of it. On that show, on the weekend, and who's involved, I've learned to never doubt this guy when there's a big match. So I'm quite excited for that. And I also think there's a chance they could win.
Yeah, I guess like you could do that. But if they win, then you pretty much like D-Courage. You have to figure out what you're doing with this unit now, I feel like.
Possibly. I mean, that goes back to the Vibes D-Courage thing where it's right. Like they should almost just pick one or the other to be the house unit.
Yeah, and then basically the belt off of Yuki Yoshioka for him to win King of Gate. That is a possibility as well. I should not have spoken ill of Big Match Jack in it. It is just the lack of build that makes me a little bit pessimistic about that.
Oh, no, I get it. I think the match has been built very poorly, actually, and I think we're going to see that reflected in the attendance. But I think for those in the building and those watching at home, I think it's going to be a truly special match.
No, yeah, absolutely. I am stoked for it with that. But Case, that is not the biggest Dragon System related thing that we have to talk about. I sent you a graphic on Slack. It is the Yokohama Buntai Glate Show coming up on November 3rd. By the time we'll talk next, this show will be mercifully over in a lot of ways. And the big question kind of coming out or coming into this, Glate announced that as of December 31st, 2025, Shima's contract will be expired and he has not agreed to renew it. However, Glate is determined to see what they can do before the end of it for his future within the promotion, as that hangs over the G-Rex title match between him and El Lindemann headlining this Yokohama Buntai show.
So what do you make of the Shima contract situation? Because I don't really have a read on it.
So there's two ways I think you can take this. You could take this completely on what it's being told, and I think it's completely realistic to do that and think that all of this is happening is a shoot, because at least when I watched Lindemann win the title and immediately call out Shima, and the way that angle kind of played out, it definitely caught Shima by surprise. And I think that with the health of that promotion, as I currently have on the show from 3 days ago that did 150 people in Osaka, that it can be very easy to believe that all of the chaos of the promotion has ultimately had Shima kind of out of power. He sees this match being made that when he thinks he's going to be defending the G Infinity titles on this show, and he gets pissed off and decides, well, I'm done with this company. I think that's an entirely realistic way to read this. I also can't discount the idea that this is a very dumb company that does some just insultingly stupid booking decisions over its 4 years. And is this a way that they're going to try to get Shima a run on top, and he's going to be like anti-Gleet when you already have an anti-Gleet unit here? That's another way to kind of look at it, Case. I don't really kind of know, but if you're going to ask me what my gut is telling me, my gut telling me is that Shima's abandoning ship, and that I know that there's shows announced in 2026, but I don't feel good about the health of the promotion going forward. I mean, I sent you this card. Is there anything about this promotion that tells you that there is a air stability coming in after Shima leaves?
No, there's, I guess, two matches on the show that I want to see between Tamura and Shima Tani, and then Shima Lindemann, which I am legitimately very excited to watch. This will be fun because I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum of you. I've heard so much about Shima's contract and the status of Gleet and Shima and Gleet that I'm fully convinced it's a storyline, and I think he's winning the G-Rex belt, and I think they're going to do whatever the most insulting angle possible is. I think that's what they're going to do, but he has nowhere to go. You know, he has no political allies, and this all is now just a deal where I'm hearing too much about it, and it feels very Tokyo sports coded. And I think he's beating Lindemann, and I think we're getting one last run with Shima on top.
Because really, you're doing the show where you have the Nakajima Suwama thing parodying and going off of Nakajima's All Japan run. It does kind of feel like the last bullet that they have left in their chamber in a lot of ways. I mean, the rest of this card, I mean, it is something in 2025 when I look at T-Hawk teaming with Naoki Tanizaki as a cursed match, but that's kind of where we're at on this show. In case your former guy Tetsuya Izuchi is being fed to another MMA match.
Oh, like, God, the undercard on this show is dreadful. It goes to show this promotion's been around 5 years, and outside of the gift that is Takahiro Yamamura, they've either not tried, or when they've tried, they failed. I mean, Hayato Tamura, I would put the brunt of the blame on him in that specific instance. I think he really bombed, but otherwise, you know, it's just a lot of these guys never had a shot, and we're seeing that come to fruition with 125 people in Osaka.
Yeah, and in a company that is doing dumb things at a point like bringing in TJP, I know you love TJP, but bringing in TJP for this show in a promotion that has like famously brought in Lio Rush to do a match that had a 7-minute time limit, bringing in Parker Boudreaux for whatever reason that you decide to bring in Parker Boudreaux. These are not things that healthy promotion should be doing in 2025.
No. I mean, I enjoy TJP as a wrestler. I wouldn't stake the financial status of my company on him. I would also say this is ill-advised.
Buddy, the yen is back to like over 150 to a dollar. I wouldn't be spending that money on that plane flight right now.
No, I unfortunately, for whatever reason, and I think it's a TJP thing more than a CMLL thing, mm-hmm. I wish I could watch him wrestle in Arena Coliseo every Saturday night. I'm obsessed with the guy in CMLL. It's not going to happen. He's going to go coach at the Performance Center. He's going to yell at people on Twitter about Kobe. We're living in the worst possible TJP timeline.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that it's entirely of his own doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's the dumbest guy ever. You know, and there's no argument. Being a TJP fan sucks. It's like being a Morrissey fan in 2025, which I also am. It's an awful existence. I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Yeah, no, but that's the
no. He's the dumbest guy ever. It's really unfortunate.
they're saying that they're billing him as the Ashwong.
God, yeah, no. I mean, just light money on fire next time.
So this match is, just so everyone knows what we're talking about, Kotaro Suzuki, Juji, and Minoru Tanaka versus Ryuichi Kawakami, Brass Knuckles Jun, and TJP. Fourth from the top.
It's amazing how you can have a match with four guys between Tanaka, Suzuki, Junji, and TJP, where I'm like, all right, this could be a nice little six-man tag. Who are TJP's partners? Oh, two people that I wish to never watch wrestle again. Awesome. Thanks, Glate. That's been your entire story.
The way that they ruined Jun Tancho for me has been like one of those things that like I just like he was such a fun little baby face.
That's God. I'm not saying he's wrong, but Jay and I always had a different outlook on some of the stuff that Jun Tancho and Shima did together, because I thought they had such excellent chemistry. And as somebody who's watched Shima bully a lot of people, I never felt like he was outright bullying Tancho the way that he had others. But yeah, that's another one. It's unbelievable how bad this promotion has been. I've said this 100 times. I'll say it, for 101st time. I just wonder so badly what Kaito Ishida thinks about when his head hits the pillow at night. And the funny thing is, based on the results of this week's CMLL show, you can't even say that Kento Takuma and Czech are the most successful Glate defects to Mexico, because Yutani's one up them.
Yeah, main event Yutani. Like that guy has won out of all of this. When like it seemed that at the time he kind of made a bad decision, and now it turned out great for him.
Haven't seen the Pueblo main event yet, but I know the result. I know the promo. Could not be more excited for him. I don't know why, because it's not like I know a ton about that guy. It's not like I've ever had an interaction with him. I don't know what it is about his story that I have been so attached to, and that I just want to root for the guy. And it has worked out for him from undercards in Guadalajara to main events in Puebla and beyond. I am just so happy for the guy.
Yeah, no, it rocks, and it tells you that there is a future after Black Generation International. Both him and Flamita have proved
it. It worked out for Yutani, it worked out for Flamita.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It worked out for Bandido.
It did, you're right. You're right, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's yeah. All you have to do is leave, and then things get better.
Galeno, he's doing great right now.
Is he? I don't know. I'm over that guy.
I mean, he's getting more work in Noah than he would if he was still with BGI and Big Lucha, if Big Lucha still existed.
Did you know? See? Well, let's close on this, because this is Tuesday night. Luckily, the NBA is back on NBC, so I'm not watching the CW network. But I saw a video last week. I think it was Ethan Page, and he ripped the mask of El Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr. Did you see this?
I did not see the segment, but I heard that he did, and that he was like wearing like Ares like level face paint for some reason.
That is something that happened, but the beauty of it, and it's the textbook definition of why somebody like myself, who is not a AAA fan, is not going to be a AAA fan, doesn't like AAA at all or the way they do business, but wants them to exist without TKO partnerships.
Yeah.
Ethan Page rips his mask, and Dr. Wagner 3 does NXT face after his mask gets ripped. He freezes. He does a shocked face. He can't believe what just happened. It's the worst mask rip I've ever seen because of the fallout of it. And it was just like, God, they don't know how to touch anything without making it fucking awful. And they have turned bad Lucha into bad WWE, and I would so much rather have bad Lucha.
Yeah, 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 because there's at least heart there.
Exactly. And this is, he's no different than Tatum Paxley or Grayson Waller, who I still can't pick out of a lineup. He's no different than Dr. Wagner 3 is no different than any of them now. I love that these Worlds Collide shows, they immediately sucked the spirit out of AAA and just made them. It's just Mexican NXT. It's just the most boring show possible with DJZ on it, who I will always be such a huge fan of.
Yeah, yeah. And like the only other thing that I can think even remotely positive is just like, hey, it's provided a landing spot for two guys that I, for a lot of times over the last 2 years, have been going, don't know how it's going to work out. It ultimately worked out, but it's just so utterly bereft of any heart and anything other than a merciless commercialism that it just eats you for like watching it. Eats you for watching it. Did see that Ultimo is working the final Santo show.
I did see that as well. Let's keep that in Mexico City and not in Kobe.
Hey, look, we only have essentially 7 weeks of that threat, man, because that's on December 13th. We can make it there. We can make it.
I maintain. I know it was, you know, one of the low points in company history and a complete bomb at the box office. I thought Santos Tour was fun. I thought the Nagoya 8-man tag was awesome. It was like a 4-star match. It was thanks in no part due to El Hijo del Santo, but it was very fun. I enjoyed it. I think I'm the only one that did. I really wish he would wrestle stateside one more time, and specifically in Chicago, but that will not happen. I believe he is finally going to be done. But I enjoyed the Dragon Gate tour.
He can go back to Dragon Gate if he can teach someone that T. Harris into the arm drag that I saw in a clip they did with Foligno.
Oh, like, well, that I know I've talked with you and Alan about that match before on a podcast, but have you seen that Foligno match?
Have I seen it in full? No, I've seen MVs.
Oh, dude, it's the greatest. It's the kind of thing, like that match, there's nothing that looks like it now. It's a more adult version of what T2P was going for. You know, they take it up a level in that match, but it's one of my favorite lucha matches of all time. It's Santo versus Foligno from Monterrey in 1998. The grappling is top notch. The striking is top notch. The drama is unbelievable. It's you got to watch it. It's on YouTube. It's absolutely incredible.
Yep, I'll go and do that tonight after I get the show edited.
You really should. It's real. It's one of my favorite matches of all time because it's so distinct. You know, you think about the 10,000 matches you've watched in your life. I remember this one so well because nothing else really looks like it.
Is this like? I have a feeling that like. And maybe this is the cold is setting in right now. Okay, so you're getting one fever dream comment before we get out of here. From that clip and what I've seen of like music videos and such like this, I feel like we should be remembering this match for a lot more than the Big Show deciding to grapple match. You know,
I don't even know if I know the Big Show deciding to grapple match.
Oh, there was like Big Show versus Kane, and then Big Show decided to like do like Matt takeovers and such.
No, I haven't seen that shit. If I see a Big Show Kane clip on my timeline, I'm scrolling so fast that my finger catcher on fire. I'm not looking at that.
And I might not be remembering. It was Big Show, but
that sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't picture it in my head. Yes, you're right. You know, you're right, Mike. We should be remembering Santo versus Foligno a little bit more than Big Show versus Kane. I agree with you.
And I think that's a good note to go out on. As a programming note for next week, expect the episode Thursday night into Friday. And we will catch you then on this. And we'll have a lot to talk about by that time. We have two shows in Osaka. And I'm going to try to get through that Corkin show before we record on Thursday.
Nice. I can't make that promise, but I will certainly try.
But we will be with you back next week. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate, both on Twitter and Blue Sky. You can follow Case on Twitter at In Your Case. You can follow me on Twitter at Fujiheya. That's it from the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care, everyone.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.